Greetings, fellow explorers, and welcome to episode 10 of Geekoscopy 101, the podcast that explores the nexus between science, story, wonder, and philosophy with me, your host, Dr. Yannis Kiston. And today we are reviewing and rating Animal Species with none other than Ellen Weatherford, host or one of the hosts of Just the Zoo of Us podcast. How are you doing, Ellen?
I am fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be talking to you today.
I'm excited to talk to you. One of my things about, you know, this channel and this brand is trying to figure out and explore new ways of communicating science to a general audience. And which is what you guys are doing with your podcast, Just the Zoo of Us. So I'm really excited to see how this thing started and how it's going. But first, why don't you tell us a bit about who you are in this moment and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I wear a lot of different hats in my life. So first of all, like you mentioned, I'm a podcaster. So I make a podcast, Just the Zoo of Us, like you mentioned. It is about animals and wildlife science, which is my passion. That's my topic that I'm most interested in. That's where a lot of my fulfillment comes from. But outside of that, I'm also a mom. I have a six-year-old and I have another kid coming in just a few weeks. Almost there. Yeah. So I also work full-time in data and administration at a local nonprofit, where I live in Jacksonville, Florida. So that's my day job, which I also love very much. It's a great job, and I love the agency that I work for. So outside of work, I have all of these other little things to fill my time and my heart. So got a lot going on, but yeah, it's about me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So tell us a bit about this podcast. How would you describe Just the Zoo of Us? What's it show about?
So it is all about animals, as the name would imply. So we, our whole kind of like gimmick, I guess, our little shtick is that we review animals and we rate them out of 10. So we have three categories to kind of make it fair. We have effectiveness, which is physical adaptations, like things that are built into the animal's body that make them do a good job of the things they're trying to do. There's ingenuity, which is behavioral adaptations that let an animal like solve the problems it encounters every day, or just things that it's doing with its body. So this could be thought of as like strategy, or maybe if it's doing clever things, stuff like that. Okay. And then the last category is just aesthetics, which is just for us. And that's just totally arbitrary opinion.
Subjective one, yeah.
Yeah, like it's just how nice the animal is to look at, which can be the most fun category sometimes, because that's where we get to really let loose. And sometimes we can really dunk on an animal. It's really fun. So we have two different types of episodes. We have regular episodes where me and my husband, Christian, he's not here right now, but he's my co-host on the show. Each of us picks one animal. And we research the animal, we learn all about it, we organize our notes, and we give it these ratings in these categories, one species each per episode. So we're each regular episode, we're doing two animals. But in between those regular episodes, I do guest episodes where we talk to experts. So I'll bring on zoologists, zookeepers, you know, ecologists, basically anybody who really knows what they're talking about, better than I do at least, about an animal. And they come on and share what they know and do a deep dive into. Sometimes it can be as specific as one species, but sometimes we have to take kind of a zoomed out view. You know, we've talked about broad categories like wrasses or like coastal sharks. So kind of two different dynamics of episodes, but each one, you know, brings a little something different and brings a little perspective, whether it's from me and my husband doing our own research or from an expert coming on to share theirs. It's always really fun. Each episode kind of changes my mind about an animal a little bit in some way. It's always very cool.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure you are learning quite a bit about some new things that different animals are doing, because there's quite a variety of life on the planet. And I think each specific species or genus or family has their own way of doing things that, that you might not have thought of that makes them successful in their niche.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of times what is fun for me is like bringing an animal that we might think would get a low score on something, and then turns out it's actually quite good at that thing. if you change your perspective a little bit. So one, for example, would be like the sloth, where the assumption was maybe that the sloth would maybe get kind of a not so good score because it is so slow. Yeah. And you might look at it and assume, well, that sloth is not very good at doing anything. But then after digging into it, found out that actually it's slow for a very, very good reason. That like the tension in their muscles is required to keep them held up and suspended in the trees. So like their muscles are slow twitch muscles on purpose so that they can be as strong as they are to stay in the tree. And also like how they move so slowly camouflages their body. Like it helps them with camouflage to be so slow. So it's like you might assume this animal is very bad. But then when you think about it a little farther, you dig a little deeper, you're like, oh, actually this animal is pretty cool. And they're pretty good at what they're doing. So they're actually not that bad. So that's always really fun for me.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it's just a matter of perspective. And you wouldn't know to look at a specific perspective until you actually, you know, research or figure out why things are the way they are. But evolution's amazing at creating these adaptations. I suppose, yeah, I mean, sloths are still around, you know, which makes them kind of successful. Like, there's a lot of stuff that was here maybe 20,000 years ago that's not around anymore. Like, think about things like William
Hammett. Yeah, exactly. Like,
or the dodo. Like, the dodo is gone. So, that might have been on us, though.
I know.
But, yeah, it's one of those things. So how did the idea for podcasting in general come about? Where did that spark come from?
So, I've loved podcasts, since I would have been about 11 years old when I got into podcasts, into listening to them. My mom introduced me when, she had those first gen iPods. You remember the first gen iPods that had like the buttons on the top? It was it didn't light up or anything like that. It didn't have a backlit screen and it had the four buttons in a row. And it was like the old school iPod. And she loaded it up with, This American Life. And we listened to that a lot. And so that was what kind of like got me to know what podcasts are. And I listened religiously, like every night I would, like while I was going to bed, I would listen to This American Life. And then through This American Life, I got into Radiolab. So I started to listen to a lot of those like NPR podcasts, basically, because I wasn't, you know, in the car all the time, but I was at home and I wanted something to listen to. So I would listen to these podcasts when I was like an early, like a preteen teenager. So over the years I followed them both, and Radiolab particularly I followed pretty religiously. And then around like 2016, 2017, probably I got really into McElroy podcasts. So my brother and me, The Adventure Zone, stuff like that. I got really into those, kind of had a little boom there where I started to just like consume every possible bit of like McElroy podcast material I could get my hands on. That's all, that also got Christian really immersed in them. And Christian hadn't really been a podcast listener before that, but through me basically blasting them 24/7, he was like, okay, I guess I'll start to get into this. So he started to get into them too. And then I guess for me, since like I went from listening to the very polished, professionally produced NPR stuff to listening to the stuff made by, you know, the McElroy brothers, made it seem more accessible. You know, it was basically like, well, they're not a media team that's like being made by NPR. They're just making a podcast with their brothers for fun. So that started to have us thinking like, maybe we could do this. Like, maybe this is something we could just do. We don't have to actually be like journalists and media professionals to make a podcast. Maybe we could just do it. Yeah. So like we had this idea bouncing around, and it was really just like one of those things that we're like, we just wanted to have something to do together. Basically, it was like a hobby, you know, like maybe this is just a fun new thing we could try, see how it goes. We had the idea came up to like tie in our love of animals and nature with it. And then we were like, yeah, this is gonna be great. But I think the thing that really like lit the spark and motivated us to actually get started was when, one night we drove from where I live in Jacksonville over to Tallahassee, Florida, which is about like 4 hours away. It was a work night. So we had to drive. We had to leave work, drive to Tallahassee. And we went to Florida State University where Griffin McElroy was giving a talk. It was just, he basically was sharing like his experiences and his journey with podcasting and the things he'd learned and advice and stuff. And while we were driving home same night, so it was like a full 8 hour round trip drive to go see this talk, and we're driving home and we're like, let's do it. Let's actually like pull the trigger. Let's hit record. And that was when we actually like bought the microphones, hooked them up, learned how to record, learned how, like downloaded the recording software and actually like got started. So that was how we decided to get going.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. It's usually just, yeah, you just start. it's very similar probably.
There was a lot of like deliberation and like prep work, and a lot went into like gathering the courage to actually start.
Yeah. But probably once we started, it was probably a lot easier to just get into it.
Yeah, we started and haven't stopped. It's been about a year and a half now, and we've like skipped episodes here and there, but always with like, you know, we haven't gone any extended hiatuses or anything. It's just been one of those things that's like, you really get into the swing of things. And then it's just like, it's become so fulfilling and enjoyable that I don't want to stop.
I can imagine. Yeah, it does seem fulfilling. So where did the idea to specifically rate animals come from? Why do that over just talking about them or anything else?
So, I definitely wanted there to be some structure and like format to the show. Especially because I, having ADHD, have a tendency to kind of go off on little rambly, you know, tangents. Tangents and stuff. So I definitely needed something to keep me organized and on topic, but I also really wanted it to be just like fun and engaging. A big inspiration for me for thinking about wildlife critically in this sort of like quantitative, structured way was specifically this YouTube series, this YouTube channel called Tier Zoo. Have you ever heard of Tier Zoo? I love Tier Zoo so much. And I had like just started watching their videos. So they analyze animals and ecology by putting them into the context of an MMORPG, like video game. Yeah. Really funny, really enjoyable. But what I really liked about it was that it does a really great job of both keeping your attention, because you can, you know, watch it for hours and not get bored of it. But they also explain scientific concepts in very relatable terms, you know, because like if you grew up on video games, you can understand exactly what they're talking about, but they might actually be communicating like legit scientific concepts to you just in a sort of language you already speak. So that was definitely something that I wanted to accomplish, that like energy of like, it's fun, it's engaging. We know what each other's talking about, but we're also learning. So I wanted to kind of find that balance. So I wanted to do something different that wasn't already being done. And I should say being done extremely well, because I love Tier Zoo very much. And I didn't want to step on anybody's toes, much less Tier Zoo's, because they're so good. So I also kind of looked around, and I got the idea from seeing that there are a lot of podcasts out there that review and rate different things, right? So like you'll see this a lot for like movies, video games, TV shows. You'll even see like food and like beer. Like, you know, there's podcasts that are like reviewing everything. So I was like, I thought it would be really fun to apply that sort of format that most people are really familiar with and apply that to the animals that we're talking about, which was something that I had not seen anybody do before. So we poked around a little bit, couldn't see anybody else doing it. I was like, okay, there's our little niche. There's our little thing that I don't think anybody else is doing. So, I decided to kind of zero in on that. And, it has really flourished. I'm glad that, because I have so much love for Tier Zoo because of the way that they explain things with video game terminology. But I also understand that, like, if you didn't necessarily grow up with video games, you're not going to get all the video game references, and like some of that stuff might fly over your head. So I wanted something that was like easy for pretty much literally anybody. Like anybody could pick up the podcast and listen to it and get what we're talking about. So we zoomed out a little bit. That's not to say we don't make our own little references, right? We'll drop a video game reference here or there. We'll give little nods to our favorite little geeky things. but anybody could just hop it, you know, like my grandma could turn it on and listen and keep up with what we're talking about. So that was kind of how we made that choice.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. I think that's a good idea. And I definitely love Tier Zoo's content. I've been a gamer longer than I've been wanted to be a scientist. So Tier Zoo is actually one of those channels where like all of my like hobbies or likes intertwine.
It's that convergence. It was one of those moments where like when my friend recommended them to me, my friend said, you should definitely check out Tier Zoo. And I found them on YouTube. I was like, oh, this was made for me. This is made specifically for me.
We are kindred spirits in that sense. for sure. And I can see that Pokeball in the background. So we definitely jive. That's a great ball.
It's my great ball.
Yeah. No, it's a fascinating way. I think Tier Zoo is actually one of my favorite examples of science communication. Like they have an audience, like the audience are gamers. Like he uses terminology and jargon that gamers, especially MMO players, understand in order to teach scientific principles. And it's brilliant because it's like all of the gamey stuff, like you just understand it if you're a gamer. So it just like flows easily, the scientific knowledge. And I think it's brilliant.
Definitely. It's very clever too. Like it's stuff I never would have thought of, but it's just so endearing. It captures my attention very well. So I was very inspired by the like sort of way that they do things. I didn't want to be a copycat, you know, like I didn't want to step on anyone's toes or steal anyone's thunder or anything like that. So I wanted to do something very different, but that was definitely a big influence on how we decided to do our thing.
For sure. They're aware of you, right? Because I think they follow you on Twitter, don't they?
Yeah, we're mutuals. So it's kind of a funny story how that happened, because recently on Science Twitter a couple months ago, I won't go too far into it because it was a whole thing, but I made a very innocuous and innocent post on Twitter that a reply to it sparked a very large Twitter drama debacle that went on around like July-ish. And so it really popped off and it went crazy. And so it was all sparked by this very innocent Twitter post that I had. I'm always like posting stuff on our Twitter, like asking people questions and, starting little, like, let's talk about this sort of thing, sort of thread. And I was asking people for opinions about something that I didn't think would pop off in a negative way, but somebody responded to it in a way that a lot of other people took great offense to. And that caused a lot of Twitter drama. And so since that had all stemmed from something I had posted, at one point the Tier Zoo Twitter account which I'd already been following because I've been following them for years, followed me back and sent me a very kind and supportive message.
That's cool.
Sent me a message basically like, hey, I'm sorry that this happened to you. You know, like this sort of thing happens. Very sweet, very supportive, very kind. And so, yeah, they, we're, I guess I would say Twitter acquaintances, which was like huge for me, by the way, when they like followed me back on Twitter, I about fainted.
No, for sure.
I almost passed out. I was like, no way. It was a big moment for me.
No, it would be for me too. I hope that one day I attain that level where I can be mutual with TSU.
Try stirring up a bunch of Twitter drama.
See, I don't like that though. That's not one of my hobbies.
I don't recommend it. It sucks. No. And I have been much more selective about what I post on Twitter since then, I promise you, because that is not an arena I would like to re-enter.
No, for sure. I've also started being more thoughtful about my Twitter content. At least trying to be. Because it is... The good thing about Twitter is that, like, once you post things, like, people generally don't look at it and, like, it's done, you know? But then also, like, when you become, like, more famous, like, people start looking back at all of your tweets to find things. So, like, not that I've, like, tweeted anything weird or anything, but it's just like, okay, you've got an account that's kind of professional in a sense. Well, the both of us do. So it's best to just keep an air of, okay, let's stick to our niche and talk about important things. But sometimes you also want to, like,
brand.
Yeah, stay on brand. But then you also want to talk about other stuff as well because it's fun. So it's difficult. Because Twitter is such a, it's such a personal social media, I think, because it's like, it's built around posting what's on your mind. You know, it's, so it's one of those weird things that I think we all as content creators have to navigate, where we have to think about like what we are posting and then, oh, should we go and delete some stuff? And,
it's a learning process.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm still learning.
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to be learning until the end of time, especially with new things coming around all the time. Have you thought about like doing TikTok content?
I don't actually, it's funny because like, this is the first time I've ever done anything with a video component to it. And I am very like not used to, now that with the pandemic, now everyone's doing video calls for everything. But prior to then, you know, seeing myself on video while I'm talking was very much something that I was like not super into. So I like would not consider doing, like, you know, people have asked us to like do a video component for our podcast and I was like, I already am a little bit icked out having to hear my own voice so often. I don't want to have to do that and also see my face. I don't want to have to do both. But I do love, for example, Jada Elcock, who is a marine biologist who does very wonderful and very successful TikTok videos where they're like short little animal fact videos. So she talks very quickly. So she's able to pack a lot of information into a very short video. Has really taken off. That has worked very, very well for Jada and has kind of inspired a lot of other people to do similar like little basically like little science communication shots on TikTok. Be like, here's just a little, like maybe a minute of science communication. So I support it. It's not something that I would probably do myself. Yeah. But I do enjoy it from other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that like, I am more in tune with long form content than I am with short form content. And you probably the same, like it's much easier to unpack things slowly for me than it is to try and condense them. I do like making short YouTube videos, but those are usually like researched and, you know, like scripted art and stuff. So I tried the whole TikTok thing, but I didn't do it in a science communication way. It was just mainly like cat videos of my cat. As one always does when they do internet things, you need to do cat stuff as well. And also, like, there's this whole, like, hubbub, you know, with the politics and so I'm for now, I'm like, okay, let's just not worry about that. Let's focus on the long form. Try and really talk about stuff.
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah. All right. So when it comes to the podcast, how do you actually go about choosing what animals to review on the weekly basis?
We put a lot of thought into it. A lot goes into picking what animal we talk about each week. So we take requests. So our listeners or our followers on social media or whatever, they can let us know what they want to hear about. We also have like a submission form on our website for people to go and like they can just go on the website, type in, you know, what they want, and it sends it to my email. So people can let us know what they want to hear. But ultimately, we end up making those final decisions about like what are we going to actually do this week based on like a few different factors. So first of all, is there enough information out there to talk about this animal for 30 minutes? 20, 30 minutes is like the sweet spot. Right. So if there's just not enough information out there, the animal could have something really cool about it, but we're like, I don't think I can talk about this for 30 minutes. Also like to really give a lot of variety. So like, I don't want to be too mammal heavy. I know that there's a lot of times, humans being mammals, we like other mammals. So we like to talk about other mammals, but I don't want to be all mammals all the time. So say, for example, I do an episode on a mammal. I'm probably not going to do another mammal again for a while. I might try to do a reptile or a bug or a fish or something like that. Like do non-mammals for a few episodes before coming back. So we want to make sure we're giving attention to like a wide variety of the animal kingdom. And then also we'd like to kind of pair when we talk about a more obscure animal that maybe not a lot of people have heard of, we try to like pair it up with another animal that is very popular. An example of that would be like recently I did the Wolverine, which I think a lot of people are aware of, and Christian did the Suriname toad, which probably a lot of people know about, especially since they have gained a lot of I guess notoriety for being very unsettling to look at. But probably like your average everyday person might not know what a Suriname toad is. So paired them together with the idea being that we can kind of like boost the lesser known animal by pairing it with another animal that people are drawn to. So they might see, ooh, wolverines. I know about wolverines. I love them. I want to learn about them. You hit play. Yes, here's your Wolverine content and also Suriname toads. So now you get to learn about the animal that is very, recognizable. And now you also have the opportunity to learn about one you've never heard of before. So we curate the types of animals that we talk about to make sure that we're covering a lot of bases and also, you know, making sure that we're representing variety of the animal kingdom in a kind of a fair way. We don't want to say, oh, this animal's too popular, so we're not going to talk about it. You know, like we talked about pigeons just like a couple episodes ago. But we would like to try to pair it with something that people might not know a lot about. So a lot goes into it behind the scenes. We've started also doing polls so that people will put up two and people can pick which one they want us to talk about. And that works too. We do want our listeners to have a lot of input and tell us what they want to hear. But ultimately in the end, a lot goes into it on our end where we'll actually have to sit down and be like, okay, what are we going to talk about this week?
For sure. And I do like that you guys are actually thinking about introducing species that are not that charismatic, as we call in the research community, charismatic species.
I know, I love the charismatic animals, and like there's so much good about them, but also like there's other animals that are really fascinating and cool that people may have never heard of, which a lot of times the animals we're bringing to the table, I've also never heard of. I had a guest come on to talk about geladas. I don't know what a gelada was. Like, I never heard of that in my life. So, and then I got to learn all about it. So that was like me learning with the listener all of the stuff that you're, that like the listener was hearing for the first time, I also was hearing for the first time. Very fun.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And definitely it also allows the viewer to kind of identify with you and vice versa, which is
I always tell my guests, I'm like, I'm going to ask you some dumb questions. Like, it's going to happen. I'm going to ask you questions that you're going to be like, you should definitely know this, but just roll with it. It's okay.
Have you ever thought about choosing species based on the importance in the ecosystem? Like, you know, keystone species, which are species that usually are holding up an ecosystem, that if they are removed, it kind of like leads to degradation.
Yeah, definitely. So especially when, since I don't have a background in ecology, it's not something, like, I don't feel as confident giving my own sort of takes on ecology, because there's so much that goes into it. But the guests that I talk to a lot of times bring that like ecological perspective into the focus. So for example, recently, I had a guest on that talked about gopher tortoises, which are a species of tortoise here in Florida that are a keystone species for many different reasons. They're like very essential to our ecosystem, and talked about not just the tortoise, but all of the other animals that depend on the tortoise and why, and like the way that it plugs into the whole ecosystem. So yeah, a lot of times like the guests that are coming in bring that, like, here's why this animal is important. You know, you might hear about an animal and think, well, you know, why would I need to know about this? It's like, well, here's why you need to know about this, because they're the link in the chain that's keeping our entire ecosystem in balance. So yeah, we do think about animals like in terms of their ecological significance. It's usually something we try to like add in, although it doesn't always factor into like the decision-making process, it is something we try to say. Like, recently we talked about millipedes. We talked about the North American giant millipede, because I love the millipede. It's like one of my favorite invertebrates in the world. And I made sure to make time at the end to talk about like, this is the role that decomposers play in the ecosystem. This is why they're important. Might seem like just a big worm with a lot of legs, but actually here's why they're very vital. So yeah, we always try to include that in there. And that's another big reason why our guests are really important, to bring that like knowledge of not just the animal we're talking about, but all the different moving parts around it and like why it's important in the grand scheme of things.
For sure. For sure. When you spoke about millipedes, it just reminded me a bit of one of my undergrad lecturers who's an expert in millipede research. He was very interesting. He was such a hard worker. Like, he used to like sleep at the office and stuff, but he was like one of the very few like millipede experts like around. And it was really cool to see the type of stuff that they do, because his sampling was like a spade, whereas in marine biology you have all these nets and like cores and like stuff, but he just took a spade and dug out millipedes.
Yeah, go dig in the dirt.
Yeah, it was really cool. So
I love millipedes; they're so good.
Millipedes are interesting animals for sure. I found one in my bathroom the other day. I don't know how it got there. Like, I'm so high up from the ground, and I'm on the side that's not like, there's no grass, but it found its way into my bathroom. Weird.
It's a dedicated little guy.
I think it might have been after water. I'm not sure. How would we know what's going on in a millipede's brain? So you guys mentioned already that you do a lot of research for the work, but just how much, like how many hours do you spend? Do you read papers, or is it like Wikipedia articles? Like how deep are you getting with the research?
I'd say for each episode, so we're putting out a segment that's like usually 20 to 30 minutes. I'd say for a good 20 or 30 minute segment, probably about 4 to 6 hours of research, depending on how readily available the information is. Sometimes you got to dig a little deeper for some of the more obscure ones. But so usually we start with websites that we already know, that we already know we can kind of trust and go to for good information. So we have some go-tos. We have Animal Diversity Web, which is a database that is maintained by the University of Michigan's Museum of Zoology. And what I really like about them is that they, you know, they will have this whole profile on a species. And then at the end, they will say where that information came from. Just like Wikipedia does, you know, they have their sources cited at the bottom. So if you see something listed there, you can go to the bottom and see, where did they get this information from? You can go see, like, if that's something that you want to use. We also look at different websites, usually websites for different zoos and aquariums. So like the Smithsonian's National Zoo, Monterey Bay Aquarium is one we look to for like a lot of, especially the, what do they call it? MBARI. So like the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute, I think is what it's called, where they do a lot of like open ocean and deep sea research. We'll look to these kind of go-to sources for information if we can find it. And then we'll also look in different journals for scientific like articles on the animal if we can find it. We're usually able to find them for free if we need to. Personally, usually if I'm looking at all these sources and I find a piece of information that is interesting to me that I would like to put in my notes, I usually try to verify it with one of the other sources first. So like I'll check to make sure that like, yes, okay, maybe I found a piece of information like on National Geographic. Okay, well, I want to take that and I want to look to see if I can find it anywhere else. Like, is it something that only one source is saying? If so, maybe it's not something I want to include in my notes. So I try to like back things up with other sources to make sure before I put it in my notes, which is why the notes take so long, you know, because to put together a list of, you know, even notes to talk for 20 or 30 minutes, that means I had, like everything that I put in there needs to be like cross-checked with other sources. And sometimes even after doing all that, then later on, like recently, I for the millipede one, actually, I found a piece of information that was listed on two of my sources that I knew to be quite trustworthy, but it just didn't seem right. Like I looked up like picture, I tried to look up pictures of the thing it was describing and I couldn't find anything. So what I did was I went on Twitter and I looked up Derek Hennin, who is a millipede expert. And I sent him a message. I said, I have a question about millipedes for you. And I asked him my question. He basically was like, I don't know where you got this information, but that's not accurate. So I was like, thank you. So I heard from the expert that, you know, that was not true. So I was able to remove it from my notes and not give false information. So sometimes like you have to really dig to get the right answer on things. That's why the research ends up taking so long to do. But I think it's really worth it because in the end we can be really confident about what we're putting out there. And I'm also even like fact checking while I'm editing. So I edit very extensively. I'm like going through the whole episode and every time I have a screen open that's like the podcast episode, and also I have another screen open where I'm typing in the things that we're saying to make sure that I can be like, this is where we got that, this is where we got that, like making sure that everything matches. And if I come across something where like we said something that didn't quite track, I'll take it out. So like it's going through the research process and then also fact checking at the end. Lots of work goes into it, but I'm very proud of the result, so I'm going to continue to do it that way.
Yeah, that's very thorough. That's almost research level.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. But it, like you said, it's worth it because you do come away with a good product. So through all of that research, what's some of the most interesting and shocking things that you have learned?
So every episode comes with a fun little surprise. There's always at least something in there that is not what I expected. The most recent thing that comes to my mind is the intelligence of pigeons. I think that pigeons are so commonplace. And so just people have gotten so used to seeing them every day that they're kind of written off. They're kind of assumed to be very basic, kind of stupid. People call them rats with wings. Pigeons get very little respect. But once I started to really dig in, I found all these studies that actually tested the cognition of pigeons. Some people were like, oh, actually, we should probably check to see if they're actually really smart. Turns out they are. So it really changed the way that I think about them. So they can ace these like surprisingly complicated tests of things like counting and facial recognition. Like they can recognize and remember human faces and like tell them apart from each other. And the one that I think really just totally shook me was that pigeons were trained to be shown mammogram images. So they would show pigeons these images from mammogram scans, and pigeons were able to reliably identify, based on the images that they were shown, which tumors were benign and which were malignant.
What?
Like, when shown a new image that they hadn't seen before, like they were able to like show them the patterns in other images and be like, this is a benign tumor. This is a malignant tumor. They were able to learn those patterns. And then when shown a new image, the pigeon would be able to tell you which it was.
Yeah.
Like something that takes like trained humans years to learn how to do. And pigeons are able to do it.
it's like pigeon AI.
Yes. So that was something Christian talked about, because Christian works with computers. He has a background in computer science, and he works in IT. And so he was able to explain to me, like, yes, this is basically how machine learning works. Like, this is how AI is able to like detect patterns and predict where the next thing in the pattern will be. So I was just really floored by that, because at that point I was like, all right, pigeons have overtaken me. Like, they're smarter than I am. They deserve way more respect. So that's like, I really enjoy those like perspective shifting moments where you learn something that changes the way that you think about something. That was probably the most shocking thing that I can think of in recent memory.
For sure. Pigeons are really interesting animals. Like, they were trained, way more than I thought. Yeah, they were trained to do really weird things in the past, especially like during the World Wars. Like, some of them were trained to direct missiles, which was interesting. I don't know whether that was actually used, but they could identify like missile targets and direct a missile. Interesting.
They're so just like, that's one of those things that just blows my mind that they're able to do that. And also that humans like capitalized on that in such an inappropriate way.
For sure.
Like, of course they would use it for, you know, military strikes. Yeah. Of course, that's very on brand for humans. Yeah. But also says a lot about the capabilities of the pigeon.
The pigeon. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Humans, we're probably the weirdest animal actually out there.
They never stop surprising me.
So throughout your, what is it now, 79 episodes, I think?
I think we just put out 71. So we just finished, we just released episode 71.
What were some of your favorite animals to review?
For me, I think my favorite one, and I'm this might be biased just because it was recent, but the one that stands out to me was the emu. The emu was really fun because it had so much to talk about in each category. Like, there was something about it in each sort of way that was really fascinating. So like, its evolutionary history is really interesting. So like, how it split off being a ratite, a flightless bird, like how flightless birds evolved, was the history of that was very mind-blowing to me. I won't go too far into it because I'll be in it for like an hour.
But you guys can go watch the podcast. I will listen to the podcast and find out.
Listen to it. It's all out there. It has these really cool like physical adaptations, like in its legs and in its feathers and just all over its body. It has things that are very interesting about it, very dinosaur-like. But then it also has really cool behaviors. So when it comes to like its family dynamics, dynamics. Like the dad raises the chicks, which is very interesting, I think. Not something you see all the time, especially in birds. But dad is the one that does the family rearing. Mom lays the eggs and pieces out. She's like, see you later, guys. Bye. And the dad stays with the babies. But they're also like really curious and they coexist with humans in really interesting ways. And then there was like this one time that the Australian government declared war on emus and like deployed the military after them. And then the emus won.
They declared war on emus?
Yes, emus were doing a lot. They were being very destructive to agriculture in these areas. And the farmers were like, hey, these emus are driving us crazy. So the Australian government was like, okay, we'll send in military forces to kill the emus. And they sent in military forces to kill the emus and they could not kill the emus. No. So the emus won. So it was wild ride. That was probably the most fun episode for me to talk about because there was just like, there was just something in each category that was like mind blowing. That was definitely a big, I'm getting like excited again, just thinking about it. I'm like, man, that was cool.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the Australian government has had a lot of issues with animals down there. Cause I remember that they had an issue with rabbits, I think. And also some kind of frog, I think.
Oh, cane toads.
Yes.
Big problem with cane toads. We have those here too. They're not great news.
Are they invasive there? Where are they from?
Mm-hmm. And they're also like super, like they're poisonous. They're like very poisonous and also invasive. So they're not doing great in Australia.
Yeah, I can imagine. But yeah, Australia generally has animals that seem deadly. And then on top of those, we put some animals there that made it even more deadly.
Australia. No, it's a perfect storm out there.
So for some of the animals that you tried or considered, what were some that after doing a bit of research, you realized they're not that interesting and you didn't really want to...
You know, we haven't really gotten to any that we just decided to straight up weren't interesting, but what we find a lot is with deep sea creatures. We'll find a deep sea creature. Like I wanted to talk about, like, to be specific, like the big fin squid, super spooky looking. They have like these legs that's like not legs, but like these arms that like go out and then angle directly down and drift just down into the abyss of the ocean. Super spooky to look at. They're very scary, very interesting though. But I started to look into them and I just really couldn't find anything on them because they live in the bottom of the ocean. Like, you know, like they're hard to observe. They're really hard to research. You can't put them in captivity and observe them there. So there's no opportunity for you to like study their life cycle or anything. So, you know, I basically get to an animal where I'm like, yeah, this is a spooky dude, huh? End of episode. Well, here it is for you. So there's a lot of times with deep sea creatures where we want to talk about them and we intend to talk about them. And once we get started, we're like, I love this, but I'm not going to be able to talk for 30 minutes about it. So we sometimes have to table them. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be doing the show long enough that at some point, maybe some research will come out about them that will allow us to talk about them. We'll table it for now. It's not to say we're never going to talk about it, just that it needs some blanks filled in.
No, for sure. It's going to be a long time until we can do studies on those things. Especially like behavioral or ecological. I mean, just merely being down there is probably weird for the animal to begin with. And the logistics of getting down there in the first place costs millions probably.
Something that Dr. Sarah McNulty talked about when we talked to her is that like when you're studying deep sea creatures, even just observing them changes their behavior because they're not used to light, right? So like you shine a bright light on them, they're confused, they're disoriented, they don't know what's going on. They're not behaving in their normal ways. So like it's nearly impossible for us at this point to see how they behave under normal conditions because you know, even just shining a light on them so we can see what they're doing, even that changes what they're doing. So who knows? Yeah. What they're doing down there?
Yeah, we probably won't have any idea until we get some technology that'll make it easier or cheaper to do that type of stuff. But one day is one day.
Fingers crossed. Yes. Holding out hope.
So what are you, straight up, like, your favorite animal groups or species? Like, what do you just enjoy knowing that it exists?
I've gotten a deeper appreciation for invertebrates. Cephalopods, I think, are probably like the ones Both that just really charm me.
I love cephalopods.
Cephalopods really delight me in that they just are so delightful and intelligent and lovely. Just like, yeah. I cannot think of a cephalopod that has disappointed me. I've never been disappointed by a cephalopod. They're That's just so point. Wonderful. Yeah. And it's something that's like, I always feel... I don't talk about cephalopods very often on the show because I get so, like, I feel like I literally don't have, I feel like I couldn't even do them justice. You know? I don't even know if, like, I would be able to deliver, like, something that would really express how amazing they are. So we've talked about a few cephalopods. So Christian talked about cuttlefish. We talked to Dr. Sarah McAnulty about bobtail squids, which that was one of those things where I was like, I'm bringing on an expert. A lot of times, someone will ask for an animal and I'll be like, this is a great animal, but also I feel like I need to bring someone on who knows what they're talking about for this one. We haven't put it out yet, but, that happened with sea stars. Somebody requested sea stars and I was like, you're right. We should talk about sea stars. I'm not going to be able to talk about sea stars though. So I went and found somebody who knows about sea stars and, got them to come on. So that episode hasn't gone out yet. So special little teaser. We talked about sea stars.
Yeah. Cephalopods, they're just so different, I think. And also, like, they just seem so alien. Like I know the evolutionary track and where it comes from, but it seems like it's so out of place and so different from everything else. And I think, like, I'm of the opinion that if we didn't evolve to be like the dominant species, I think given enough time, like a cephalopod could be. It has like all of the things it might need to become like a species that might become sentient at some point.
If they like were able to cross over into becoming terrestrial, it would be game over for us.
Yeah, we'd be done. They're just so malleable, you know, because like we needed like tools in order to survive, but they can like bend their bodies into weird things. And like, so yeah, it would be game over for us.
Can fit anywhere. Yeah. And they can use tools too. They don't care. They'll use tools. They can shapeshift. They can turn invisible. They can do whatever they want. It doesn't matter. The fact that a mammal even like rose to the position that we're at is kind of surprising, I think. Yeah. The fact that it was a mammal that did it. The cephalopods, I think, are the ones that just... they blow my mind the most and probably bring me the most joy to think about.
Yeah. I'm also team cephalopod. I'm sure you have a favorite dinosaur as well. Like, what is your favorite dinosaur?
Dinosaurs are a gap area in my knowledge. I was super into dinosaurs as a kid. Yeah. But I think that... like, I think dinosaurs and like being very passionate about paleontology is like so awesome for people with the imaginative, like just abilities to like be very immersed in their imagination. Like, what would this animal have been like? Which I did as a kid, but I think as I got older, I started to focus more on like what I could observe in, like that's here now. So I have a little bit of a gap in my knowledge about dinosaurs, but one that has always stuck with me was Mayasaura. The dinosaur that, which by the way, this could be very old information. This could be information that I learned in 1999.
Yeah.
That is no longer valid.
Yeah.
But in my memory, Mayasaura stands out as a dinosaur that showed a lot of parental care, like towards its offspring, which my understanding was that was not something most dinosaurs did. Mm. So like started to show some like investment in the well-being of their offspring. That was always really interesting to me. So Mayasaura sort of stands out to me.
Okay. So you've chatted quite a bit about the podcast and what you guys
quite
have
talkative.
Been doing. No, it's really cool. I think you have to be if you want to host a podcast. But away from the animals and back to you as a person, like since you started, you know, creating content now as a podcaster, has your consumption of media changed in any way during this time? Do you still listen to the same stuff, watch the same stuff, or has it changed in any way?
Yeah, I think that, well, especially this year, because of the pandemic, which in my area is still very, very active, I'm in a hot spot. So I'm working from home. I am homeschooling. We don't leave our house very often, and my commute was one of the big times when I listened to podcasts. So I'm not listening to as many podcasts this year in particular as I have been before, but I still listen to Radiolab religiously. I still listen to This American Life. So the classics I've stuck with, I still listen to McElroy podcasts. But I do think that as I've started to like become more educated on science and more like engaged with it, I have started listening to more like science-based podcasts. I started to get into ologies. After starting our podcast, actually, I started to get really into ologies with Ali Ward. And that's been really cool. That has also given me some perspective shifting, on some things. So I like that one a lot. I do still though rely on like lighthearted and humor driven shows, to just for some levity, you know, like you need a break sometimes. Sometimes my brain just needs a little nap. And I need to just listen to something funny that will make me happy. So it's not all science all the time for me. Sometimes I need a little break. But yeah, I'm still listening to podcasts. Now that I have my son around, he's 6 years old, so I can't listen to a lot of not safe for work stuff. I'm listening to a lot of like kid friendly and family friendly sort of things. Watching a lot of documentaries on TV so that we're making sure we're, you know, having good family friendly content in the house. I would say that like my tastes haven't necessarily changed, except that I've just gotten more engaged with science communication content, because now that's like something that I not only am more knowledgeable about, so I can keep up with things and like get what people are talking about, but also like it's more like, oh, I'm going to listen to how they do it so that I can do mine better. I'm going to listen to how somebody who does it better than me, how they do it, so that maybe I can do mine. I can improve my process by listening to how other people do it.
For sure. Standing on the shoulders of giants.
Oh, yeah. There's always room for improvement.
Do. Yes. And all can all improve. I'm sure this show will get better as well over time. So you did mention that you do a bit of gaming. How did your love for gaming come about?
So my love for gaming and my love for animals probably cropped up around the same time when I was about 3-4 years old.
Okay.
So I got my first video game was my Game Boy Color that my grandmother got for me when I was 4 years old. She gave me a Game Boy Color with Pokemon Gold. And she was like, I know you really like animals, so here's this little video game where you run around and catch these little animals that have magic powers. Mm. I was like, that sounds awesome. I started playing Pokemon when I was 4 years old. It basically taught me to read. Like, I learned how to read from like playing Pokemon. And just never really stopped. I always had video games. My mom worked for Microsoft when I was a little kid. So we got like the original Xbox, like before it came out, and that's got cool. to play all the Xbox yeah. games. So I was a little Xbox kid. When I was older, I got into like Nintendo games, was always really into Pokemon, but like started to pick up some of the other Nintendo games. And then now that I am grown, we have the PS4, which Christian plays more than me. It's his PS4. But we also have the Switch. We play a lot of Switch games, and Christian and I play Overwatch on the PC, like more than any sane individual should. We play a little too much Overwatch on the PC. That's like okay. our go-to de-stressing. Relaxing. At the end of the day, okay. need to unwind. We'll like hop on and play a few rounds of Overwatch. So we play on the PCs these days. And then within the last like couple of years, we started playing Dungeons and Dragons. Okay. We started to like get into the tabletop gaming scene, which we have not been like immersed in until becoming adults. Actually, the Adventure Zone podcast got us interested in trying to start playing D&D, which we do now. Very fun. We're both from more of like a video gaming background. So tabletop is not something we're as familiar with, but we're learning. Christian's much better at it than I am. he's an experienced DM at this point. Our first campaign that we ever started just wrapped up like a few weeks ago. Okay. And that campaign was running from like 2018 to like okay. a couple weeks ago.
That's good. That's, I think, probably longer than the average campaign, 2 years. I think most campaigns end after 6 months, probably.
Yeah, we were all... So Christian and me and two of my friends started it, and it was all of our first time playing D&D, and it was Tomb of Annihilation.
You started with Tomb of Annihilation.
We okay. did, which now, in retrospect, we realized was a really... really bad idea.
Jeez, it's like starting on hard mode.
Yeah, we started on a very difficult campaign, and I was the only one who lost a character the whole campaign. I was playing a druid in a dungeon crawl. Nothing. Nothing to go off of. Yeah, so but it was really fun. We've been on and off in a couple of other campaigns like since then, but we like sometimes we'll drop little references in the podcast to like the, you know, we'll drop little like D&D references or little like Pokemon or just like references to other little video games that we play and stuff. It's definitely influenced us a lot, and it's a big like thing that we do together. Yeah. You know, a lot of our relationship blossomed over a mutual love of video games and geeky materials.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Have you ever considered doing like a April Fool's episode where you review like a D&D monster or a Pokemon?
Yeah, we've been asked to do that, and we've only had one April Fool's episode ever so far. And April Fool's Day is also my son's birthday.
Okay, that's cool.
So for my
dad's birthday is on April Fool's Day.
It's a fun birthday to have if you're really into it. And so for my son's birthday, he did a fun little like episode where he like invented his own animal and talked about it. It was really cute. It was probably the dumbest thing I've ever done, but I put it out there anyway because it's adorable.
Doesn't sound dumb at all. That sounds amazing.
It was really cute. I mean, because he was 5 at the time when we recorded it, right? But it was really funny because I listened to a lot of podcasts with him in the car. And so I realized that he didn't ask him to do this. I didn't like coach him or anything, but he like got into this character. Like, he like got into a very like a very erudite sort of character. Mm-hmm. And then even like what I thought was so funny was at the very end, we're like getting wrapped up and everything. And I'm like, okay, thank you so much for joining us today, Isaac. And he looks at me, he goes, thank you. It's been an honor.
That's like, amazing.
I had to hit stop. I was laughing too hard. I was like, whose kid is this?
It's hilarious. And I think
he gets it honest.
With that, it might be a good time to stop on a high note. And with that, it's time to pack up camp and head back to our labs and or fantasy worlds. But first, Ellen Weatherford, why don't you let our leather off? This is the first time I've messed up the ending. But why don't you let our fellow explorers know where you can find where they can find you and your work on the internet?
Yeah, sure. We're probably most active on social media. We have a Facebook group. Just type in like Just the Zoo of Us and that'll take you to, we have a page and a group. The group is where I'm more active. On Twitter, also Just the Zoo of Us. That's where I am a lot of the times. You can message me, follow us, whatever you want on there. We're on Instagram too. I'm a very bad, I'm a horrible Gen Z representative. I never use Instagram. So I will respond if you DM me. But other than that, I'm less active on Instagram. We have a website. So that is justthezooofus.com. And that has links to all the different places where you can find us. And just, you know, if you want to listen to the podcast, we're on all of the major podcatchers. So like iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, stuff like that. You can find us there.
All right. Thank you, Ellen, for joining. And thank you to the listener for sparing your time. I hope you guys had fun learning with us today. Otherwise, stay safe, keep well, stay tuned, and cheers.
Thanks, everybody.